Hello, I'm Monsignor Jim Lasanti. This week on Personally Speaking, my guest is the great actor Adam Kanter. Please stay with us. Hello and welcome to Personally Speaking. I'm your host, Monsignor Jim Lasanti, and actor and singer Adam Kanter joins me now. Adam is making his L.A. stage debut in the Geffen Playhouse's production of The Inheritance. He won an Emmy and a Grammy for his performance in the Tony-winning Broadway production of The Band's Visit. Adam also starred on Broadway in Fiddler on the Roof, Next to Normal, and the final cast of Rent. He recently starred in the feature film Either Side of Midnight, and his television credits include Billions on Showtime and the CBS drama The Good Wife. Adam is a graduate of Northwestern University and the British American Dramatic Academy. He's here with us today to talk about his current role, his life, his career, and the values that matter the most to him. Joining me now, I'm so pleased to welcome to Personally Speaking the wonderful actor and singer, Adam Kanter. Before we get to our interview with Adam, let's listen to him singing from the new cast album of Darling Grenadine. Adam Kanter's our guest. Adam Kanter, I've had the privilege of seeing in Fiddler on the Roof from Broadway and a band's visit, the band's visit. But now this new play, Adam, not so new, but new in Los Angeles, The Inheritance. 7 hours over two different showtimes. You've talked about it being emotionally and physically draining. What does Adam Kanter do to stay strong enough to take on a powerful, amazing role?
Well, I'd say it's quite appropriate to say pray.
Okay.
Pray for the strength to anyone or anything that will listen and maybe grant some adrenaline. Right. Now, you know, it's, I joke that we're running on adrenaline and a prayer, but for me, this has been an experience of true soul excavation, unlike anything I've ever done. It's really been therapy, and I mean that in the deepest sense. And I think what we, or at least what I know I rely on more than anything, is just some centering and meditation before jumping into it, because it is an experience that is a true roller coaster, but it's also one that has the opportunity to really, really impact people deeply. And my task 8 times a week is just to stay as grounded as possible, especially in this role, which is really, I think, there's a lot of talk about a cherry tree in this production. And I see my character in a lot of ways as becoming as rooted as that tree. So I think about that image.
Okay.
And I do loving kindness meditation.
Well, Adam, you said in other places when talking about this particular role of yours that the character is innately kind, and I like that idea. In fact, the motto of our parish here is kindness matters. But what about not you in the role, but you as a person? Do you find it easy to be yourself, an innately kind person?
I hope so. You know, the experience of playing Eric Glass, I feel, is making me a better person. And I feel while the experience of doing it is in many ways so heavy, I feel a sense of lightness and joy that I get to inhabit that every night, because this is a role who truly thinks about the well-being of others. Sometimes to a fault, you know. There are moments when we have to put our own oxygen mask on first, and I think there are a lot of times when Eric is often, you know, a people pleasing and expending a sort of energy that might be too exhausting, you know, so a desire to make sure everyone else is okay. But look, that practice of loving kindness is, I think, in a way, is healing for me, and is also, I think, making me a better person. And I aspire to be the kind of teacher, mentor, and healer that Eric ultimately becomes.
Adam, let's go back in time a bit. I have the privilege of being the caretaker for and living with my 102-year-old mother, and we regularly go up to Doctors in Great Neck. We went 2 days ago. And so as I headed up the road, there's a Great Neck North on my right side, the school that first produced you back in high school. Were you the theater nerd? And how well or poorly were theater nerds accepted in Great Neck North?
I love the question. I love that we share that connection. I was totally the theater nerd. My first role was, as I mentioned earlier to you, the rabbi's son in Fiddler on the Roof. This was Great Neck North Middle School, sixth grade. And then I, you know, that got me hooked. Dan Tomaselli's productions in Great Neck North Middle School, and then Laura Stern at Great Neck North High School. And I just continued on to my senior year. And this, you know, I felt a lot of love and support from the community, I have to say. I think there's something about the proximity to New York City, that theater, it's, you know, it sort of pervades the atmosphere over there. And, you know, Great Neck is a very Jewish community, you know, there's a very large Jewish community. And I think the world, you know, there are so many Jews in the theater world, and so many theater practitioners who have come from Jewishness, and of course the, you know, history of the Yiddish theater, and so many of the, you know, Stella Adler and Lee Strasberg, and so many great Jews who have come up in the theater. And I just think there is this innate, there's something there, you know. So I did not feel like a total outcast, because I did. Right. I felt like an outcast in maybe some other ways, but but no, I felt a lot of love and support doing it.
When we're with Adam Cantor, when we go through high school plays and college plays, it's not unusual for our parents to be happy, proud. But for most parents, if they're honest, have an interest in the arts as an avocation is fine. But the idea that my son is going to do this thing, that's not the most dependable way to live your life. Your parents, when you made the decision to truly leap into the arts with everything that you are, support or reservation?
It's, you know, it's a good question. So I grew up, of course, I'm lucky enough that I grew up with two parents in Great Neck, and I had two living grandparents in Great Neck, and two in Florida, but I had all four grandparents alive until well into my adulthood. My two grandfathers passed just a few years ago, and my grandmothers are still alive. One is almost 100 years old. And growing up, I had a great grandmother who was 102. I would say I had total support from all of them. Wow. I do remember, however, that when I sort of, you know, came out to my great grandmother that I wanted to indeed pursue a life in the theater, which sort of took a deep breath before I told her. She took a deep breath as well and said, you should do what makes you happy. I have my reservations. I don't know that it's a life. You know, she said something to the effect of, I don't know that that is a sustainable kind of life, but you should do what makes you happy. So she definitely expressed those reservations. And I understand it. It is not always an easy life. And it is not a life that, is certainly the traditional life that my great grandmother led, and that so many people, I felt very much growing up in Great Neck, New York, that there was a kind of, this is the life you lead. This is a sort of tradition. It was a very, it was a bit of a monochromatic, homogenous bubble in a way. And there were not many people that I know that, chose this kind of a life. But
No,
I
I agree with you.
really
It's
hope.
it's an up and down. I'm going to talk more about what are the anchors in your life, and I think family is certainly a big one in your mind. But let me ask you this. When anyone looking at your biography online will say, "Oh, he seems to work a lot. This guy gets jobs." And you do. But there's no actor who doesn't find that I went after something I was perfect for it and I didn't get it. Adam Kanter's handling of disappointment or rejection is what?
Oh, it's a lifelong journey, probably. I don't know this that there's a secret. I think you just keep going, and it's just part of it. And I know it might be cliche to say, but every opportunity is a learning opportunity, and it's sort of a Zen practice, this art of auditioning, because you really have to let it go. And I think understand that so often it's really not about you. If you don't get, there are so many factors at play that have nothing to do with you, or that are just completely out of your control. So why grasp onto something too tightly when ultimately it's out of your control? You just keep doing the work, keep doing the good work, keep learning, keep intaking and outputting, and continue.
Adam Kanter's our guest, and he was talking a moment ago about coming from Great Neck and the incredibly strong Jewish community there. So I want to talk a little bit about that. On Long Island, it just seems that there's a whole lot of Catholics and Jewish people who intermarry, and I do a lot of those ceremonies. But I mention it because when I sit down with the couples and I say, where are you coming from in terms of spiritual background? And most of the guys or gals who are Jewish in my office will say, I want to live the traditions and the cultures. But very rarely do they mention the religious or spiritual or otherworldly dimension. In terms of the world that you grew up in, Judaism as culture, as tradition, as history, or is there a spiritual dimension too?
Oh, I mean, I have definitely found a deep spiritual connection more than anything else, I think, really in the last few years. And I think in ways because of the theater work that I've done. It really started with when I did Fiddler on the Roof, not the one in sixth grade when I played Manfred Lehbach, but in 2016, or we started actually in 2015 on Broadway, the most recent Broadway revival, I played Model, the rabbi's son. And I was cast in the spring of 2015, and I knew we weren't starting rehearsals until that fall. So I had the summer off to prepare. And I love to travel as a way for me, traveling is an experience of expansiveness, and one that I very much relate to myself as an artist. I feel like I learned the most when just getting the most outside of myself and what I know. So I thought, well, wouldn't it be great if I could go to the lands of my ancestors for the very first time and connect deeper with myself, and also be able to draw upon that during my process of rehearsing Fiddler this coming at the time that fall. So I went with a group called Yiddishkeit, which is a group of artists and activists and scholars that they go to all around the former sh the shtetlach of yesteryear, where there, the villages of Lithuania and what are currently Lithuania and Belarus and Ukraine. I went to Kiev, and I went to the areas where Sholem Aleichem wrote the stories on which Fiddler on the Roof is based. And I felt this very deep understanding and connection of what it meant to live there, to be Jewish there, and to really be a descendant of immigrants. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they would call themselves refugees in the means in which they left, but somewhere in between immigrant and refugee, let's just say. I don't think it wasn't a vacation they were taking. They needed to find a better life. But that was the beginning of what I think was a connection to something a little more spiritual. And that has continued, even not just in my preparation, but in the work itself that I do. I'm a singer, so I learned the Kol Nidre, which is maybe one of the holiest texts in Jewish liturgy. It's sung on Yom Kippur, the night before Yom Kippur, or I guess it's what launches Yom Kippur every year. And that is my great-great-grandfather was a cantor, and he emigrated from Eastern Europe, brought by his synagogue to America, and was known for his Kol Nidre. So I found through music and through theater, through the projects that I've been fortunate enough to do, this deep spiritual connection to my ancestry and to my Jewishness, for sure.
And one of those connections, for those who are listening and watching a program like this, New York Times in the real estate section had a great article recently featuring Adam and his wonderful grandma. And I'm just intrigued by, you know, we think that young people are only going to be intrigued by other young people, and yet you called her precious to you, and she is that. What's the special bond between you and your grandma?
Oh, thanks for asking. I miss her. I'm in LA now. She's in New York. She brought me to my first show, which was Full Moon with David Shiner and Bill Irwin. And that's really where I really caught the bug. In fact, I remember she and I were sitting in the box, in a box seat, you know, with my parents and my late grandfather, and Bill Irwin, the great Bill Irwin, broke the fourth wall and climbed up into the box. The whole show is silent. It's silent physical comedy and pathos. And he broke the wall. He climbed up into the box. Oh my God, what's going on? Bill Irwin is right next to me, and they not on the stage anymore. And he starts messing with me, and the spotlight is on me. And he starts whispering directions in my ear when sort of hiding it from the audience, kind of a sleight of hand. He'd be doing all these physical bits. He'd say, okay, take the ticket out of my back pocket. And I'd take the ticket, and he would go, oh, where'd you go? And then he'd say, okay, throw it over the balcony. Throw it over, and the whole audience would erupt in laughter and applause. And all of a sudden, I was thrust into the show. I was way too shy of a kid to ever do that by my own volition. But I was just thrust into it. I had no choice. All of a sudden, I think that's where I caught the bug. My grandma continued to take me to theater, to museums, travel. She opened my eyes. Food. She fed a curiosity in me that continued to grow. She has this innate sense of wonder about the world, sort of a term that our rabbi on our process of Fiddler on the Roof used, radical awe. She has this sense of radical awe and amazement that I so admire, and that I see keeps her young and alive. And I think it's such a critical key ingredient that an artist can have, is a sense of a radical amazement about the world around them. And for me, that's also connected to faith and the idea of spirituality.
Mm-hmm. No doubt about it. And the other reason she stays young and vital and dynamic, I suspect, is because she has a grandson who has an incredible love for her. And I believe we keep our seniors very much alive by the love we share. And just the pictures of you guys in the Times, it was so self-evident that there's a special bond there, which is beautiful to see. Another kind of parent-related question for you, Adam, especially being in the inheritance. But recently a young man came to me and said, you know, he knew he was gay, and his problem was his mother, who's very, very Catholic, just couldn't accept it. And he asked me to talk to her, and I said I would. But I mention that because it's interesting to me that she's more Catholic than the Pope in a way, and that our Pope Francis is the one who came out when he was meeting with gay guys in Chile and said, God doesn't care if you're gay, and the Pope doesn't care if you're gay. Both God and the Pope only care that you live a good life and you do good things with your life. And I thought that was so refreshing. But from working in the community, which is much freer about being gay, the arts community, what would you say to that parent, if you were me, who is not sure about fully accepting her son as who he is?
Oh, that is such a good question. I mean, I guess I would say, see what happens if all you give is love and support. If you can find that, if you can find what, from what I understand, the deepest teachings of Catholicism, and from what I understand, the teachings of Jesus are, which is that of love.
Yeah.
See what happens if you can give that and only give that, and see how you feel, see if you feel a connection to your idea of God by doing that. And if you don't, see how you feel when you don't. You know, it's like, I think you have a choice to make. Make the choice of love.
Mm-hmm.
And I would venture to guess you will feel closer to your idea of God and your and the roots of your faith by offering love. Try it.
Yeah, no, I
sounds a lot easier to say, with knowing how hard that can be.
Yeah, I'm going to definitely share that with that wonderful woman as she struggles with the issue. You know, we've had all sorts of interesting people over the years, and one of the people we had a couple of times was Elaine Stritch, who could be very, very difficult and a true true diva in every sense of the word. And I said to her, because she was impossible, this TV show we were doing, I said, why? Before we went on, I said, you were just miserable to everybody and such an incredible... and she said, it's because I'm so frightened of life that I strike out. And but the other guy we had on recently was somebody you co-starred with, and that was Danny Burstein, Yotevia. And either he's a great actor, which he probably is, or he is the nicest man in the world. With you, when all right, that's a good combination. Yeah. Are you ever inclined to believe your press and to, when people blow smoke up your dress, believe in such a way that your ego takes over? Or what keeps you anchored? What Adam Cantor stays with his feet on the ground because of what? What keeps you normal?
Huh. Well, thank you for saying that. I'm not currently reading any of the reviews for The Inheritance out here. Mm. I hear that they are raves and so fantastic, and everyone in the cast is like, you're crazy. And my not the grandma that I've lived with in New York, my other grandma who lives in Miami texts me. She's in her 90s and is very active on her texts. And she's texting me saying, why aren't you reading these reviews? You're crazy. And I said, you know, because if I believe the good, then I have to believe the bad, you know? Yeah. And I have to just trust the work that I'm doing and the medicine, as Tantu Cardinal in my cast says, that this show is giving the audience the medicine that we're giving and that they are giving us, and that the energy to trust what we know exists in the room and in our heart. And if we start relying too much on, as especially as artists, on what others think of our work, then we might be led astray into something that is inauthentic.
Adam, you don't really need an agent in this business. You have two grandmas, you know?
He often says she should be my, and I agree.
They're so good. They're so good. I promise I'm going to wrap this soon, but I wanted to ask you, when we air this, it's going to be with you singing a piece from Darling Grenadine, and I don't know much about that, so tell me about it.
Oh, I'm so glad to hear that. Darling Grenadine was the last show that I did in New York just as things were getting really scary and shutting down in 2020 with the coronavirus.
Okay.
It's a beautiful musical written by Daniel Zajac, a small, intimate, gem of a musical that we did at the Roundabout Theater, their underground space.
Okay.
And we were, thankfully, we were able to do a couple months of performances before we were shut down. And then we just got back together to record the cast album as the world is, you know, as the theater mm-hmm. world is going to open up. And I'm so excited. It's coming out on November 18th. So very soon. Mm-hmm. And it's got beautiful, tuneful music that I think will resonate with a lot of people. And I'm excited to share it with the world.
Good, good, good. For those people watching and listening to our program, and they say, this young man, Adam Cantor, sounds like a wonderful guy. How do they find out more about what's next? First of all, obviously The Inheritance, if they happen to be in Los Angeles. But if they want to follow your career and your music and get your albums and all the other great stuff that come out of you, how are they supposed to do that?
Oh, you know, folks can just follow me on Instagram, I suppose, which is
okay.
Adam J. Cantor.
Okay.
At Adam J. Cantor, and I typically post about things like the Darling Grenadine cast album, The Inheritance,
good.
Whatever I'm doing at the time.
Good, good, good. And when are you coming home to visit your grandma?
You know, I'm not sure how long we'll be extending here. We should find out very soon. But I'll definitely be home by the holiday, definitely by Christmas, even though we don't really celebrate Halloween. We'll probably order Chinese
food. I want to thank Adam Cantor for being with us. I've had the privilege of seeing him on stage. He's a wonderful actor, wonderful singer. But I hope for our listeners and viewers, you got to discern that he's a marvelously kind, innately kind man, and shared openly and honestly with us today. And I'm so grateful to you, Adam, all the luck in the world, and so grateful to you for being on Personally Speaking and being open enough to talk personally about you and your life and your hopes, your dreams, your values, and the things that matter to you. And thank you for being with us.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
As we end today's program, I want to thank you all for being with us. If you need to reach me, you can write me at personallyspeakingpodcast@gmail.com. You can also go to this show or past episodes by going on YouTube and searching under Personally Speaking with Monsignor Jim Lusati, where you'll be able to watch shows as well. And please don't forget to click like and subscribe. Personally Speaking is also on Facebook at Personally Speaking with Monsignor Jim Lusati. We're also now on Instagram at Personally Speaking Podcast. I'm privileged to serve as host and executive producer, Personally Speaking. Our producer is Lisa Jandovitz. Thanks so much for joining us. We'll be with you again next time on Personally Speaking.